think there's enough there to our team focusing on this season and in the here and now that we have a tremendous amount of belief in our team. And most importantly, they're just excited about a chance to compete against a very good and challenging opponent. But we think our guys will respond tomorrow.
You better hope so, Sheldon Keefe. You better hope the Maple Leafs respond with something which is now tonight. Yesterday has become today. Yesterday's tomorrow, today. Toronto Maple Leafs playing tonight. You better believe it, against the Tampa Bay Lightning, looking for a response. Somehow, somebody sent me a message yesterday, and they said, it's tied 2-2, but it feels like the Leafs are down 2-2. And I said, that's how I feel, too. Too far? Too negative?
No.
Too rude?
No. It feels like, we talk about it, tonight feels like a game seven, a must win, winner takes all. And I know it isn't technically, but it just, I can't think of a way that it's not. And yet it is 2-2.
Okay, so I actually want to start with this stuff because I don't really care about fan-shaming things from anybody. Like, whether you're an internet account with 6 followers or you're a media member that uses the fan-shaming thing as their bread and butter, which some do, right? But there is this weird thing about following the Leafs where you almost expect the worst. You're always hoping for the best, because otherwise, what would you be doing? You wouldn't be a Leafs fan, or you wouldn't be caring at all about this hockey team if you didn't, at some part of you, didn't believe that you were this just one breakthrough away, right? Just one break, one bounce. And it actually reminds me a little bit about Tampa Bay in Game 2, where the Leafs had been the better team, and they were looking for something, right? They were just looking for a little piece of momentum. And Victor Hedman gets that puck, and he puts it by Jack Campbell, who's sprawling and falling, and boom, Tampa Bay goes on to finally find themselves in the series. And I want to play this clip by Morgan Rielly, because I think that it really does summarize a lot of what the feeling is going into tonight. Roll it, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. I think as a group, we feel like we have learned a lot in our past experiences. I think that's natural. When you go through something, you reflect and you look back on what you wish you did differently. Then moving forward, you try to execute those things. And I certainly feel like that is the case with our group. We've learned a lot. I think we've matured. But until you start to get those results that prove that, it's pretty difficult to have those open conversations with people who might control that narrative or might want to say that we haven't. They're free to do so, but it's on us to produce some results and prove that we've grown, we've matured, we've learned. And I tend to believe that is the case. And, we are making steps forward, but until we get the results, obviously that'll be up in the air.
So I think Morgan Rielly's the captain of this team. Jake Muzzin gave some great quotes yesterday, and he's actually the most fearless quote on the Toronto Maple Leafs is Jake Muzzin historically. But Morgan Rielly is the guy that's been here from the very beginning. He was the first guy to be the Uber prospect that ended up turning up. Like, he's a Brian Burke draft pick. That's the thing. this is not a Leafs roster that doesn't have Kyle Dubas' imprint on just about anything, or at least his shadow of something. This is a completely different regime. That's not Lou Lamoriello. It goes back to Brian freaking Burke. This guy has been here. He's known nothing but disappointment, right? There's been optimistic moments, but Morgan Rielly has seen nothing but disappointment. If he's going to say those things, I believe him, and I think that group believes that after 82 games, that they've matured, after all of these playoff runs, that they have grown from it, that they've gotten better as a team, that they see it. They have it in these moments, right? We've seen it in this series. The Leafs were better than Tampa through the first 2 games. Hell, through the first 3 games, because they were better in Game 2, and they didn't get the result, and they were better in Game 3. And you look at the series on balance, and yes, a lot of this is tilted by Game 4, but the numbers 5-on-5, this hasn't really been a series that's all 5-on-5. Maybe it's a little unfair to evaluate it purely at 5-on-5 when it's been the parade to the penalty box, as John Cooper put it, but the way Morgan Rielly spoke about that, where he goes, we have to prove it, that's all anybody is waiting for with this team. That's all the entire hockey universe is waiting to see. It's the biggest question in hockey. And other fan bases can deny it. They can pretend like they care more about what ends up happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Sure. Sure. But this is actually it. This is hockey right now. Is whether or not the Toronto Maple Leafs can break through with this talented group. And I really think that this is it. This is it tonight. Because if they fail tonight and they lay another egg and they're not prepared, once again, they come out slow, they perform poorly, I find it extremely hard to believe they're going to win two straight, because why would anybody believe that after blowing this game? But this is it. Morgan Rielly and that group, these are your two. This is your identity games as a group forever and ever and ever. These next two games, if you can close out the defending Stanley Cup champions, people will believe in you. They will believe that you have matured. They will believe that you have grown. They will believe in all the things that that locker room wants. And you can tell that they're bothered at times by the narrative that is behind them, because why would a guy like Morgan Rielly bring it up? A mature, savvy guy who's used to speaking to the media for this long. Why would he bring up the people who control narratives, which is like, I guess, us? Pretty cool. Morgan Rielly, shout out. Thank you, Morgan. But
yeah, you know who controls the narrative right now, though, is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. But he knows it. And that's what I'm saying, is he knows it and they know it. And it's whether or not that pressure is going to be the privilege, quote, Ailish, or whether or not it's going to crack them and they're going to completely fall apart down the stretch here. It's fascinating theater, but I don't know how you could have, like, one strong conviction one way or another about how this is going to go.
I would be super fascinated were I not so invested in the outcome. This would, if I'm a general hockey fan right now, this is the story of the playoffs, and I know non-Leaf hockey fans like to pretend that they don't care about the Leafs as much, but
it's their favorite
this is
team.
Huge. This is that's all before getting into the trickle-down effect of what if they don't do this and it's six consecutive first-round exits or play-in exits and all the things, all the questions and all the changes that'll come from that. But yeah, it's really fascinating to be this close to it and to watch really closely. Are these guys going to figure it out? Because Morgan Rielly said it. They have learned the lessons. Like, they know the answers. It's an open textbook exam at this point. They've done it five times and come up short. And that doesn't assure you anything, though. So I'm really excited tonight. I'm fairly nervous for tonight. I agree with you. I think Morgan Rielly is kind of the voice of this team. There's a reason I've mistakenly called him the captain twice this year. It feels like he's the captain, and the other captain, and maybe we'll get into this when we get into our individual kind of must-win-o-meter, but the other captain has been less noticeable in this series. So,
well, I
less
think he's
noticeable as in invisible?
Yeah. John
I was
Tavares
just going to mention, hey, guys, it's
this.
Text Line Tuesday as well, so let us know your thoughts all day. We're going to cycle your texts in throughout the show. How are you feeling going in tonight? Who has to have the biggest game of their lives? Every single player, but who especially, and what's the must-win-o-meter for you listeners today? So 590, 590, hit us up.
So I've put this now as a must-win game. I think that with the pressure, and maybe, you know, maybe I won't put this at a 10 out of 10. Maybe I'll put this at a 9.5, because I'll talk myself into the idea that now that they're playing from behind and that there is no expectation for them to win, that they could end up reeling off two straight, where they do the, they finally get the nobody believes in us, we roll two in a row, maybe. It's hockey, who knows? Maybe it could happen. But for them to lose home ice advantage for what we saw on the road in terms of the matchups and what we've seen 5-on-5, it's extremely difficult for me to believe that the Tampa Bay Lightning, the coffee is for closers group, isn't going to find a way to win two of those games. That Andrei Vasilevsky is not going to find a way to win one of those two games remaining. To me, tonight, Toronto's got to have this, especially after the stinker. Like, if they had battled and they had been looking good this series, 2-2 is not, all 2-2s are not the same. Like, I saw a lot of people bringing that up, how all these series are 2-2. Look, it's 2-2 here, it's 2-2 there, it's 2-2. No. The 2-2 for the Toronto Maple Leafs with actual coverage and the history that their team has and failing the way that they did in Game 4, that matters a lot more than other teams that don't have baggage, that don't have those no-shows. I'm sorry, it just does. We've said it. This has been one of the themes of the show, is that momentum doesn't carry over game to game. You better hope it doesn't, because if Tampa has now the series, whatever, momentum, then Toronto's in deep trouble. And if they can find a way where it goes like it has been throughout the series, where it's like, nope, every game has been unique, Toronto should be fine. But I think they need this one tonight.
Yeah, 9.9 for me, because technically, yes, there is a chance that if you lose the game, you can come back. But the Leafs have no proven track record of that. That's what really, really worries me. They need to get the first goal, too. I think it's as simple as that. Starting the game off, getting the first goal. You look at it when you're a player as like, what are these tangible things we can control? You break it down into mini games. You don't look at it as a 60-minute game that you got to go out there and win. If that seems overwhelming, which it can for the Leafs at time, okay, let's start with first shift. Win the first shifts. Every line gets out there, touches the puck. Let's get that first goal. Look at how much momentum has swung every single time that a team has gotten on the board first and controlled the game. That's what happened with Tampa in game four. They completely took control from the beginning of the game, and that's what the Leafs need to do. They're going to have that home ice advantage. That's awesome. Get the fans in it right away. Get the crowd juiced up. How do you do that? Scoring, outplaying them, trying to keep out of the box. But yeah, I don't have much confidence, and that's sad to say, but going down 3-2 and heading back to Tampa, playing in a team that hasn't lost back-to-back games in like 16 attempts over 3 years or whatever, like Vasilevsky being able to bounce back every time they lose, it makes me really nervous that he is waiting to steal a game. You know, we talked about it all series long. He hasn't had a Vasilevsky-esque performance yet. I think out of these next three games, you can probably guarantee that he's going to turn it on for one of these games. And you don't want that to be game seven.
So
you want to get up on the board and up in the score as early as you can.
What scares me about being down a game in the series is that you're already hearing these guys put out the platitudes after that loss, right? So that's what I'm saying. If you lose tonight and you've already burned your message of we're a more mature group and we'll be more prepared and we thought we were prepared but we weren't prepared and blah, 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 like you go down the line. I don't know how you come back from that as a group and look at each other and say, well, this time it's going to be different. That's what scares me. This was always the reason for me to break the team up last year. And I went, no, it was wrong. It was right to double down. It was right to triple down, quadruple down, quintuple down, whatever down you want to versionize this. This seemed completely right in the post, the regular season. Now that they're in the playoffs and now that they're faced with that adversity, they have to look at those figures in the room and believe in one another. And I know it's Tampa Bay and it's a tough out and it's not Edmonton getting to play the Kings or the Predators being faced by Colorado, right? Like, they got a tough draw, but that's it. They got the tough
draw.
Everybody has to be over it. That's exactly how it works. They knew that from the beginning. And guess what? Sheldon Keefe was the number one guy saying they have to be... This was the matchup for them. This was the great thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is what the Toronto Maple Leafs wanted.
They encouraged it. Hey, perfect.
Exactly.
We'll slay the dragon. No worries. Right. We'll go through the best team on this side that has the most history. Look at what that'll do for us. Well, now it's time to like put up or shut up at this point. You can't say all this stuff and say you've changed and say you want this matchup and then lose.
And some of that is coach speak.
Oh, of course.
But you also, if you're the Leafs, like you can't use those things and say that it's going to be all right. So yesterday I ended up shopping around. So I think that I want to talk about the most compelling players tonight. To me, it's like pretty clear and obvious that, again, it's a game about the top four. I guess which top four player you're most kind of concerned with. Maybe there is someone else. I don't think it is Jack Campbell. Again, I don't think that they're going to win on the back of Jack Campbell. I just think Jack Campbell can't kill them. I think that the blue line has been more physical and better, but... yeah, they've got to find ways to be more effective in their rush defense. But I think Bourne kind of outlined for us yesterday that so much of their play is going to be forward reliant in terms of team defense. That's never been more true than ever. But I was texting people and I was asking around yesterday, like, who wears this and what happens if they lose, right? If they end up losing after game four, what did game four do? And it seems pretty clear now, I think, at this point that Leafs lose this series and Sheldon Keefe, it's going to be a near impossibility for him to keep his job. I don't know about the front office. That seems to be very much less clear. The front office had a pretty good season and all things considered, like you look at the series and the things that are going well for them are moves that they made. So I'm not sure that ends up being turnover. But the big four would be broken up. But by all accounts, I don't even know if the Leafs would approach John Tavares about moving that no-movement clause. I think he's still a guy here. But the captaincy thing that Bourne has brought up, I think will get very, very loud and very, very noisy and could get very awkward and be the beginning of a weird offseason. But okay, let's start with the guy tonight that you are most interested in, Blake Murphy?
Yeah, it's got to be John Tavares for me. And I went back and forth on whether it was Austin Matthews because, hey, what's your counter to if you're going to have Vasilevsky do Vasilevsky things and have this amazing night at some point? And look, it's happening. This is, over the last couple of years, this is the worst four-game stretch of save percentage in Vasilevsky's playoffs over the last three seasons. Like, he's going to have a game where he looks even more like Vasilevsky. And so Austin Matthews is the counter to that. The counter to elite goaltending is elite goal scoring. However, Austin Matthews is never going anywhere. The John Tavares question is a real big trickle-down question mark. And just, I feel like this team would really get behind if John Tavares is out there having a strong night. He has two assists in this series. He's minus three at 5-on-5 and has been not invisible, but not super visible. I just, like, look, this team is not designed to get nothing from two of those top four guys. We talked about this all season long. And the really interesting wrinkle is, well, if your backs are against the wall and you go to kind of the nuclear option, the, like, hockey version of playing your LeBron or Giannis at center, it's putting Nylander on the first line with Matthews and Marner to try to supersize or soup up that top line and get some offense going. And where does that leave Tavares? And sure, Tavares has looked okay in some checking line scenarios this year where he gets two of the Kasha, Camp, Engvall group, but that's not what you need out of an $11 million captain. And you look across, and again, I said this a couple games ago, Steven Stamkos is older than John Tavares. It's not as if Tavares is long in the tooth as far as hockey players go and guys who should be still able to contribute. So this is one where it's a big John Tavares game for me, especially at home where they're going to be able to put him in advantageous spots and really leverage. I know no one will care if he goes 15 of 15 in the dot and that's all he does, but they'll really be able to leverage his faceoff ability as well. So this is a big JT one for me. Ailish, what about you? Well, JD, yeah.
Mine is exactly what Blake said. And it's hard to add to that. I mean, all the points completely run down the list of reasons why. But maybe one thing that I'll additionally add is the weight of being a captain. Like, I have had that privilege before, and you need to do more and be more than just a good hockey player. And he has been fine, but I just don't see that edge and that leadership and that desire and the drive. Like, this guy signed in Toronto as a lifelong Leafs fan, and there was so much promise around him leading this team and being a captain. And it's like such a privilege to be a captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I honestly don't see any type of responsibility on his shoulders. And I know that different types of leaders can be visual leaders, leaders by example, you know, captains that jump over the boards and punch people in the face, or they just work their ass off in the corners. But I don't see any type of, like, what type of leader are you when your team is down or possibly going to have this colossal loss again year after year? You've had the best regular season of Toronto Maple Leafs history. This should be something that's weighing heavily on you, and you should be able to respond to that and let your fans see that you care. Like, I know he seems to be a stoic guy, but maybe that's not working. Like, every single media outlet over the last 4 or 5 days have been pumping out John Tavares articles, John Tavares hits, because we're not seeing it visually that he cares or that he's doing something more than just saying in the media that he wants to do more. I think it'll weigh heavily on Leafs fans, on us as media members, this entire offseason, if it just doesn't look like there's an extra edge to his play tonight and the next two games possibly. If it doesn't look like he wants it or is going to elevate his game at all, like, you can say all this stuff, but if you don't show it or raise your level of intensity a bit, that to me is just as telling as not getting on the score sheet.
Okay, so I guess my answer is different because, and I don't disagree with anything that you guys said. Like, Tavares should be showing way more than what he's showing. I guess my expectation level for him has just changed drastically. Like, he scored less than 30 goals this year, and he played a full season. Like, he's not the same guy. Like, he's just not the same guy. We saw stretches of it last year where we went, what is going on with Tavares? And then it was sold to us as, well, he's being more defensively responsible. I still think Tavares, it's tough, because when I watch him play, to me, he's still a positive player. He does, again, a lot of things that people don't notice as easily as some of the other top three guys, right? The other top three do things that are more visually appealing than John Tavares does. And I know no one does want to talk about faceoffs, but if you look at what has been so pivotal in the series, like winning draws in the offensive zone and winning draws for this power play is like monumental. And he has done that extremely well. But you don't make $11 million. Yeah, you don't make $11 million for that. This is the problem I have with the Tavares thing. I don't think he's going to be able to justify that now ever. I think that that's done. Like, to me, I've already basically had... I've already gone through the seven stages of grief. You guys are in a different stage than me. You haven't hit acceptance yet.
Two extra stages. There are only five. That's how hard I grieve, Blake.
That's how hard I grieve, you know? Everybody does five steps. I do seven. All right? You think it's like there's two other steps. Tavares, to me, is just not the key to this game, because I don't think Tavares is one of the best 10 players in this series anymore.
Well, that's my little bit of an edge. I don't need him to be one of the best 10 production guys. I need that extra element, that maybe intangible
Don't think he's a fighter, though, Ailish. Like, I don't think that he's someone that's going to punch someone in the mouth. And, in fact, if John Tavares is punching somebody in the face, to me, that's a sign that you're in, again, trouble. Like, you've got him off of his game.
I don't want him to punch anybody either.
But I'm just saying that I don't know what, I guess, the intangibles are. Because he's not a guy that hits somebody. He's not a guy that does. Like, to me, Tavares' line has to not get caved in. They need to be a positive line. If they give you secondary scoring, that's a massive thing in this game. But tonight, to me, is an Auston Matthews judgment game. Like, this is an Auston Matthews game. He had two shots in the last two games, even strength. Two.
He's down from almost five a game in the regular season to fewer than four a game in this series so far.
Okay. He was brilliant. No, I shouldn't say brilliant. He hasn't had a game yet that I've been like, wow. He had some real moments in game two. Like, he had the forecheck and the back check, and the one forecheck that created a goal that got the Leafs back into the game, and the back check that kept them in it in that contest. He was good, complete 200-foot player. They have had a lot of penalties in this series, and so we've kind of gone, well, he can't get into rhythm, he can't get in the game, he can't do this, he can't do that. I need to see Auston Matthews impose himself in a hockey game and be the best player on the ice. Because their line got hard matched in those last two games by the point line, right? And what happened? They lost. They lost those minutes. And this guy, again, I've mentioned this before, but he has been touted as the greatest goal scorer 5-on-5 in the NHL since he came into the league. That's obviously true. But he needs to prove it when it matters most. And last year it was all like, well, Mitch Marner choked. Well, Matthews had one goal. And I've talked about this with people. They go, why does Matthews skate? And I go, because he's done it before. He's already proven who he is in the playoffs. He's got completely different playoff numbers. No, they're not as good, but they're so much better than Mitch Marner. And he never looked like he crumbled under the pressure. I'm not even saying that he is crumbling under the pressure, but this is a guy who's going to be standing at the podium probably at the end of the year accepting the Hart Trophy. League's best player. In a league that has Connor McDavid. And people have said, no, these guys are not worlds apart. It's going to be awkward if he steps up there and wins that award and he continues at this pace, where he scored goals early in the series and he has these points, but everybody watching it knows that now Victor Hedman imposed himself in the series. Braden Point imposed himself in the series.
Well, think about how you were talking pre-show about Shesterkin.
Exactly.
Fraud. Yeah, people are going to be like, Matthews, fraud, Shesterkin, fraud. Doesn't matter in the postseason. Well,
that's exactly right. Nobody's been worse than Shesterkin. Like, again, yesterday, watching a goalie quit is a real sad state of affairs. And that guy really quit. Maybe the triple overtime game broke him from energy and ability level. But, yeah, Shesterkin's regular season is completely flush now, right? Like, he goes into the Bobrovsky category of, well, you don't trust him in the playoffs or he's not the same guy in the playoffs. I kind of think that Matthews, as loved as he is in this market, if they go out in the series and by the end of it you look back and go, sorry, Matthews scored those two goals in the game where Tampa was flat starting the series and then he didn't score again, that's going to be an issue. That's going to be tough. And, yeah, they're probably going to give him the C during this offseason. Like, that's likely going to become a thing. But that's not as easy as a transition either if he's not able to dominate these. Blake, I like your point about the Nylander and pushing him up there thing, but I think that's for the road. To me, that's when you go to Tampa Bay, you give that a look because you haven't been able to dominate 5-on-5 against that group, against that shutdown line. I just don't want to see another playoffs where the story of the series is, oh, well, Austin Matthews got matched up by a tough defensive line and was not able to overcome it, when, again, their line is also a $20 million line.
Well, there's also, you can look around the league at other guys who are doing similar things in similar situations, right? And these aren't necessarily fair comparisons, but if Austin Matthews wants to win the Hart Trophy, he is in a conversation with guys like Sidney Crosby, who, of course, Sidney Crosby gets the toughest matchup every time he touches the ice for his entire career. He has 9 points through 4 games. He's been able to raise that level of play. Brad Marchand has 9 points, and Marchand's line gets some pretty tough defensive assignments at times because he's a 200-foot guy as well, and that's kind of where the bar is if you want to be in the discussion for the best player in the league. And I know McDavid hasn't exactly gone gangbusters from the scoring sheet so far, but even his line, like he's a plus four at 5-on-5 to Matthews' plus one. He's winning the 5-on-5 minutes in that Edmonton series. So, I'm with you. Like I said off the top, I almost went Matthews in part because of everything you laid out and in part because that's supposed to be your Vasilevsky counter. Is having the best goal scorer on the planet. Let's see it. I'd love to see a really forceful Austin Matthews.
Again, he's a mutant, and I think that this year he proved that the gap between he and McDavid as best player in the league was not that large. But I don't want to hear anything about Sorelli, Point, Killorn, and then the Hedman
because
stuff.
It's the playoffs. You're going to be matched up against tough players if you want to win the Stanley Cup.
This is not like a new thing that's happening, right, to the best players in the league where they go, oh, they put the best defensive matchup against the top line when the other team was on the road. Like, yeah, no duh, but Blake just said it. Like, other players have elevated.
Oh, he's the best player in the league. You just can't have a matchup against 32-year-old Alex Killorn. Then that's a different story. We have to have a different class of Hart Trophy. Like, come on. Alex Killorn's really good, but the best players in the NHL are supposed to be able to outplay the best checking lines.
And that's exactly it for me. There's no real pressure on Matthews because you'll do anything to keep Matthews and he'll run it here forever and ever and ever. But, this is a really, really good hockey team. And this is, I think that what almost frustrates Maple Leaf fans the most is that this team is so good that you feel like you blow this, and will you ever be able to replicate a team quite like it? You know, will you ever have a team that's quite this good? You're going to go into an offseason where, again, it's going to be really hard to keep Mikheyev. And if you're looking at Leafs that have had the biggest impact in the series, where does he rank? Third? Fourth? Among your forwards? Like, he's been up there. He's been
he's
pretty noticeable.
The Rich Strike of the season, as those were calling him.
No, that's
and I know
the Rich Strike of the season is David Kampf. Like, that's got to be.
That's true.
I know the penalty kill hasn't been as good these last three games as it was that game one and in the regular season.
I mean, they held Tampa to 1 of 8 in the last game, and I actually think that was sort of the missed thing of the game. Is that
could have been worse.
That the Leafs really were good on the penalty kill in that one, and that this
and
is a special
it's
team
honestly
series.
Honestly, the
still feel
saving
good about.
Grace. Watching back game four, and I was pretty critical of Justin Hall early in that game, but he's had a real impact on the penalty kill, and the penalty kill is the one thing that still looked good in that game. For the series, they're down at 78%, which isn't going to cut it. But you know, game four, it kept them from getting embarrassed, and game one, it pretty much won them the game, being able to withstand that. So Mikheyev's a huge part of that as well.
I think that Hall is this is the last thing I'm going to bring up in terms of this block, because we'll get plenty more later. Luke Fox, we'll see if he has any indication at 7 o'clock as to where the lineup is going to go and what the room feels like. We have John Buchigross today at 8 o'clock. Can't wait to speak to him. So, yes, of course, loaded. And as Ehlers said, it's text line Tuesday, so fire away. Text 590-590. Reach out on Instagram or Twitter at JD Bunkus, at Ehlers Forfar, at E. Blake Murphy. But lastly, you mentioned Justin Hall. Are there any lineup adjustments you're going to make? Because I think that a lot of Leaf fans in the game were getting really mad at Justin Hall. And, he's going to be mistake-prone. But they didn't realize that first turnover is not actually his fault until I think you see the highlights. Or if you don't really know the game, then you go to automatically blame the defenseman who turns the puck over, and then it kind of is one of those retroactive. You go, oh, okay, well, someone has now explained this to me differently about what a forward's obligation is there. And
Gio doesn't put him in the best situation there either.
Well, I just think that Hall has two really, like, they look like really bad turnovers, but only one of them is actually on him. And that on the whole, the blue line wasn't very good. And I thought Hall at least, like, maintained his effort level and trying to keep his spot throughout that game. And then if I mention the penalty kill, like, the Leafs holding them to 1 of 8 in that game, especially since for a couple of those power plays, like, Eric Schalgren is in net, and one of the only one they scored on was a 5-on-3. Don't forget that. It was a 5-on-3 where they scored. I think Hall keeps his spot. Like, to me, he showed his value in that 1 of 8, and that's what was Sheldon Keefe's gambit. And I know that that weird media question got asked about how he's their worst defenseman, and I believe that on balance, Liljegren was better down the stretch. But this is kind of what we talked about with the Raptors series with, like, Fred VanVleet, where you go, sometimes guys can be better than other players, but the series isn't right or the matchup isn't as right. And in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where there are a million special teams moments, when it's penalty kill or power play so often in these games, I actually think there's more value in having a guy like Hall in the lineup than there is in having Liljegren. But I will say that I really want to keep Spezza in the lineup. I know he didn't have a great showing, but I'm still rolling with Spezza. I still think that the Leafs forward lines that they had the last game should be the ones that they do in this one, and that going to Kyle Clifford would be a mistake.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch the forward lines either. I would understand it if they did it, just to mix things up, to get a different look. You're at home, so you can protect it a little better. I would get it, but I would keep it similar. And the reason why is the same thing you just outlined for Hall, right? Like, when you're talking these fringe roster decisions and sit-start decisions, what is your specific utility? And Kyle Clifford's is this intangible physicality and toughness that might materialize for 6 minutes in the game or might materialize for 49 seconds and then he's in the box and gone. Spezza has that PP2 and offensive zone face-off ability, especially at home. I think that carries a little bit more because you can pick and choose a little better. And yeah, Hall has that on the PK. And again, I've been critical of Hall down the stretch here. He was the guy I would have put as the seventh defenseman heading into the series. But yeah, the PK has been good. If anything, they won't do this because of the toughness and own zone play and stuff. Lyubushkin has had a rough series after that first game. The possession stats are really not in his favor. So you could look at maybe taking him out for Liljegren. I don't think they're going to entertain that, though, because they love his level of physicality in front of the net and in their own zone.
And so do I. I think the transition stuff, though, is a real problem. Like, I'm torn on it, too.
In terms of, well, we talked about it with Bourne yesterday. They have their defensemen sit back deep in their own zone on Tampa zone entries. And part of that is because they don't have the speed to contest the rush. And Lyubushkin is a part of that. And then he's also not particularly adept at helping you get the puck out of your own zone. So
it's not
he's almost like
Blake. He's awful at it. And he had one moment in the series. No. You don't need to be diplomatic. No. This isn't the podium where we're asking Sheldon Keefe questions. I would say that, to me, the bigger point of curiosity would actually be seeing if Liljegren can fit next to Morgan Rielly again and having both of those guys play together if you were going to insert him into the lineup. The problem I have with it is that, again, Lyubushkin is a weird player in the sense of I have moments where I go, oh, you're the most important guy. Like, you actually eliminate plays and you kill plays in front of the net and you're nasty. And then I see him in transition, and if you look at the series on whole, their numbers 5-on-5 together. Like, this is where...
Bad.
Well, that's what I mean. This is where you go eye test versus the numbers, and you start to say, well, which one of these things are you supposed to care about? And not saying that Lyubushkin has completely passed the eye test either, that it's some definitive thing. I think that he's had a really up-and-down series, like very up-and-down. Just to me, Sheldon Keefe trusts Justin Hall on the penalty kill, and Justin Hall has been good in that role, and... As much
There'll
as
probably
might
be
not
some
like
penalty
him.
Kills.
Yeah, that's it. It's just I think
especially
that he established
if you make the Clifford decision.
That he yes, to me he established himself as a guy that should be there given his play. Also, people should also acknowledge that Sheldon Keefe didn't pull Timothy Liljegren on a whim. He pulled him on the guy was not playing very well. In game one, Toronto had their best game of the series, and Liljegren was the only guy who didn't play very well. He was turning the puck all over the place. He didn't look comfortable in the series. He looked like a guy where the change in play was a little bit over his head. But, you know, you don't bring that up when it's a 4-0 win. You sound like you're kind of taking a shot at a guy. I'm just saying that it wasn't as though Liljegren had done something in the postseason where you went, well, this guy absolutely has to play. This guy is undoubtedly doing something. So
I think
to me,
we all understood when they made the switch for game 3. Yeah. And like, The Lyubushkin thing is especially tough because when we talked about making the Clifford and Simmons for Spezza switch on the fourth line, part of my argument for that was, well, look at how Muzzin and Lyubushkin played over these first two games. You're getting that level of toughness from your back end. You don't need to be searching for fourth line guys for that. So if you take Lyubushkin out, does that accounting change a little bit? I'm unsure. I'd personally make the Liljegren for Lyubushkin swap, but I completely don't expect it.
Ailish, do you change the fourth line? Are we? Because I'm maintaining.
I
my
have
spot
been debating having... this internally for the last couple days.
Yeah, but your debate is to put Blackwell on the first line, not to change the fourth line.
I was a huge advocate to put Spezza in, and we know that. And I was a little bit underwhelmed just after seeing it happen. But I just think you have to decide what your mentality is going into tonight's game. There's pros in putting a Clifford or a Simmons back in the lineup when you've seen kind of how these games have shook out. And I also don't hope that you're going to be going down 5-0 and needing people to punch people in the face, right? So that's the problem. If you signal to be like, we're putting Spezza and Clifford back in, I don't know if you're approaching the game with the right game plan. I think by keeping Spezza in, you're saying, hey, we want to be more offensively and defensively sound. We're going to need Spezza on power plays, PP2. We're going to need him in good leverage positions in the face-off circle. If you put in a Simmons or a Clifford, to me it signals, oh, this game's going to get out of control. We're going to need these guys to buckle down and make a statement. And I don't know if that's the way that the Leafs should be approaching tonight's game. I think there's a benefit to have a tough guy back there, sure. But I also think, what does that mean for how you're approaching what you think this game's going to be? So I can see it being both ways. I'd be interested to talk to Luke Fox what he thinks or what he's hearing, but I don't know. That's just the perspective I have going into it. Is like, what is your thought on how this game's going to go, Sheldon Keefe, if you do that?
Yeah, to me, the value of Spezza, and I know you took a penalty in game four, but on that power play.
So have the other guys. Much worse.
I'm keeping him there. And your second power play unit shouldn't play as much as the first. It's not even going to be close. And it's like, how many minutes are you deciding that he's going to actually get on the power play, right? Like, maybe the game is called a little tighter and it doesn't work. But to me, this is what it comes down to. The Leafs' fourth line is never going to be as good as Tampa's fourth line. Tampa's fourth line is having a real impact. Like, if you're looking at swing things in this series, right? Like, what has really determined the outcome? It's actually pretty shocking how much of a positive impact Tampa's fourth line has had versus a negative impact and a jumbling that Toronto's has had between the bad penalties, bad plays, and just kind of zero output that group together has essentially put out there. Like, again, Blackwell, a good moment in game three. But outside of that, their fourth line has given them absolutely nothing. They've been a huge net negative. Huge net negative. Whereas Tampa Bay, every night, Maroon is doing something positive. Perry is doing something positive. Belmar scored in the last game, and it was off of a tricky play, but he still did it. I can't chase that hope that you can match that group. All I'm hoping for is less negative play. And what was the reasoning behind changing up the fourth line from most people that you talked to? It was when they went down in that game, people went, this is why you got to have a tough guy, because you got to have somebody that changes the momentum, blah, 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 blah. No. How you change momentum in a hockey game for the Toronto Maple Leafs is by being yourselves, and that's with skill, and that's with scoring, and that's with Jason Spezza. Mm-hmm. Those guys should barely play. They should be barely playing. And that's tough because you're rolling out like a three-line team, essentially. But I think this is truly a game where you go, hey, every once in a while, you're going to have to actually double-shift Matthews, especially if there's going to be penalty kills and you're trying to find spots for him. Or you're going to double-shift a Tavares, or you're going to double-shift a Nylander. You're going to put them with those guys. And I'd rather see Spezza with that group than Kyle Clifford with that group. And so that's what it comes down to for me, is that whatever minutes that those guys find, they're going to be sheltered and you're not going to feel comfortable about them. But I just don't want anyone that I think is going to be more liable to take a penalty. I don't think that hitting a Kyle Clifford hit or a Wayne Simmons hit is going to change the way Tampa plays. I don't think that they're ever going to be able to bully that team. I don't think they're going to intimidate that team. I don't think that there's anything they can do. They just need to lean into who they are, that skill, and that still spets it to me. And overreacting to the performance in game four, to me, would be a mistake. I'm sticking with my guns.
glad you mentioned the Matthews ice time thing too, because it was the one point we didn't hit on earlier with the Matthews talk that I wanted to bring up. The last 2 years, Keith's used him 15% more in the playoffs. He's down about a minute per game so far, and some of that's the penalty kill. But you saw it last game.
And that last
before that game got out of hand, he's playing the whole 2 minutes on a power play. He's like PP1 goes off, PP2 comes on, and Matthews stays on. And I think you're going to see more and more of that as the series goes, because him playing 19 and a half minutes a game, you got to get more. Like, he played 25 minutes a game the last two postseasons. You got to get something closer to that for him, because these are must-win situations. And you know, this is – we know what Austin Matthews brings when he's on. So, yeah, I would expect that fourth line to have even less of a role.
Okay. Let's take a break.
Keep your texts coming.
Keep your texts coming. And up next, an A-list with what?
With, if we get to it, a very personal revelation of mine.
That's perfect, Tease. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and A-list, Sports F5 Night of the Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 Fan, JD Blake and Ailish. Text Line Tuesday, favorite day of the week, except for Baby Friday and regular Friday and Hump Day. It's in there. It's better than Monday. Big night tonight. Obviously,
Monday's
we got Jay's
like takeoff loading day, though. It's not as bad. Like, I don't mind
the
Monday. You know?
All the days are great when I get to spend it with you guys.
I think Wednesday is the worst.
You got Leafs.
Hump day, just because it's got hump day, like, what's that about?
Yeah, Wednesday's like, tough. You're like, this is only midway through the week.
That's what I mean.
How did we get here?
Yeah, Wednesday is trash.
So I teased it before the break. Maybe I will regret what I'm about to say on the A-list, but let's roll it, Josh.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Stop.
Had a very difficult day yesterday. Something quite tragic and heartbreaking happened to me. I found my very first gray hair of my entire life.
You're the oldest one on the show.
I was brushing my hair and I saw a glimmer and I thought, that's strange. And I got closer to my mirror and I parted my hair.
Yes.
And there was a single glistening gray hair. And I started to think to myself, this is the end. Yeah, the end is nigh.
It is.
No! God, please, no! No!
Yeah.
Before I started this job, I had no gray hairs.
Yep. Yep.
And here we are. They have arrived. Is it the Toronto Maple Leafs? Is it spending my mornings beside you two? We will never know. But yet, here we are.
It's that you're an old bag of dust. And here's the thing about that. It's that... The thing that I love the most about this is, one, your old jokes are out the window. Because from now on, you're Baba Ailish. You know, you're Baba. You're Baba Ailish. What do you have... And we'll turn to you and go, what do you have to say, Baba Ailish? Like, please let it... Impart
back
your,
in the my time.
Yeah, exactly. Impart your wisdom on us, old gray hair. And that's what it'll be from now on. So, yeah, I've never had a gray hair. I actually had someone tell me yesterday...
But your hair is blonde, so it's hard to tell.
My hair is very
dark brown.
I had someone tell me yesterday that I just continue to look younger. When I went to that wedding full of people from university, it was just nonstop. You look like you're getting younger. Why are you so... And to me, I feel
Benjamin
revitalized.
Button.
Yep. I think what's happening here is I'm going back. And I you're just rapidly going forward. Blake has a beard. Blake is just a guy where we won't know what Blake actually looks like until he shaves his face. Like, one day down the line, he'll have a wife and she'll go, "What do you look like shaved?" Then he'll shave. He'll look his real age. But
she'll be like, "Where's my husband?"
beard is the ultimate trick, right? It's just like, you know, it's the ultimate trick. You just like, what age are you? Who knows? If it ever gets any touch of gray in it, it looks awesome. You know, it's the cover for all things. You get a zit, who cares? Beard. You put on 5 lbs, who cares? Beard. That's the only thing I wish I had in life is not more money, more friends, a family. I just wish I could grow a beard. That's all.
It's great. I love having a beard.
It's everything no arguments, I said and more.
Yeah. No arguments here.
Yeah, no, it's everything I said and more. Well, but yeah, okay,
Baba Elish. I've been working on my playoff beard, and it's unfortunately not going to make it in time. But okay. A very sad day.
You and
life.
I both.
Please
we
send
should have
your
a contest
regrets.
And see who ends up winning. It's going to be.
Please
maybe
send your thoughts and prayers to Elish as I continue to rapidly enter the final stages of
a
my
Baba
life.
Elish. That's you.
Okay. Well, I did have a Baba, so that's probably what I'll do today. Anyway.
I know. That's you. What's next, Baba?
Okay. Well, everybody listen up.
Okay.
Okay. We touched on it yesterday that there are a lot of great things that happened in the sports world, from UFC to Formula One, Kentucky Derby. But
correct.
This was a little interesting tidbit. After winning a fight at Fury FC 61 on Sunday, Joel Bauman was interviewed in the ring. And what he said is quite the honest admission. Let's play the clip, Josh.
Last fight, I was tired. I was exhausted. I'm about to launch this NFT that's going to change the fight game. And I put in 30 all-nighters before that fight. I had herpes before that fight, 2 outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. Okay. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I fight.
I'll tell you this. I hate every single thing about this. Like, I just, first of all, I had to Google what Fury FC is. And I think that Fury FC is officially the league of guys with herpes who want to scrap. Like, way to go. And NFT bros. Like, this is the combination of all the bro things. Like, hey, what do you do? Well, I fight a cage fight in an amateur league. I have herpes and I'm super into NFTs. I got to tell you, I'm one of those people, and I own a bunch of crypto. I'm on Team Bitcoin. People know that about me. But seeing the NFT market crash the way that it did, I genuinely took some pleasure in it because I didn't understand it. And I was like, am I really going to be the only one who doesn't have any money for digital monkey art? You know, like where it's like a picture
so
of a monkey.
So stupid.
And it's the stupidest thing of all time. I go, Eminem paid, Snoop Dogg paid how much for a picture of him? For what? Sorry? This is how much this cost? And I went, well, you know, I'm done. I'll never have digital real estate, all these different things. And watching it crash was great. So, yes, the herpes amateur cage fighter who stayed up 30 nights in a row drinking obviously Monster Energy drink and doing some type of Adderall or whatever to work on his NFT, that's what I picture as, he's everything. He's the complete picture. Like that, there should be an NFT of him because that's what an NFT is to me. That's their art.
What an excuse for losing a match that you had two
herpes
outbreaks.
I love how he threw out two. He's like, it was two. I just have one herpes outbreak. I doubled down. I had double outbreaks. Oh, sorry.
His excuse might be worse than when Blake loses the Wake and Rake.
Yeah. Oh God.
Tight.
Yeah.
It's close. But
it's close. But that was a tough one. That's a tough one, herpes cage fighter who loves NFTs and Red Bulls and Monster Energy drinks.
Okay, one more here. The MLB, and I played us in with London Bridge, Fergie, what a banger. But the MLB has made some concrete plans to bring the game overseas to the UK starting next year. So it's a long-term strategic partnership that includes the MLB's commitment to 5 years of major events in London. And we know the Yankees and the Red Sox played at London's Olympic Stadium in 2019, and the Cardinals and the Cubs were supposed to play there, but the pandemic stopped it. But the two games that they did play at London Stadium were the first ever regular season games played in Europe. They're going to do something a little different, which I thought was exciting. They're going to bring kind of a new spark to what the MLB can bring overseas. They're going to have something called the Home Run Derby X, which is, quote, an electrifying new baseball format, which will take place in London's Crystal Palace Park on July 9th, 2022. The Home Run Derby X is going to be with MLB legends and alongside characters new fans trust and care about. So they're going to bring this new thing over, try to spark the MLB overseas. It is obviously a trend that's happening. Wondered if you guys like love this type of trend, trying to bring the NFL, the MLB, NHL overseas. And if you were a fan on the text line, would you plan like a trip around going to see your favorite team? Or is that something that like doesn't interest you at all? I'm curious.
Well, there's the ballpark people, which I think is a cool tradition thing. So there's going to be some ballpark people who go. And a little piece of trivia about me is I've been to all the ballparks, plus, and people are going to go, you went to the place in Europe and saw? I know that all sports have to try and expand, and a lot of them have to try and expand through Europe. I almost wish we had a little bit more time on this, but I just don't think baseball is a sport that you can really sell internationally. Like, I don't know. I just think...
You don't think home run derby X moves the needle?
No. It's just, hey, if you're not a part of the tradition, like... Hey, do you want to sit for 4 hours, especially now they stopped juicing the baseballs, and watch strikeouts? Like, it's just, no, not particularly. I love baseball. I really do. But I think it's the hardest sport to sell to a younger or international audience. And I don't think that doing a home run derby X that sounded like made up the way you wrote it was good. Is it going to work?
Just tired of every sports franchise trying to be like the Jaguars, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Pick someone better to emulate, guys.
Your ex. Yeah, it's true. That's the team that's the worst franchise in the NFL, unequivocally, has been trying to do this for years. Since, like, follow their lead, everyone. Just keep going. Keep going, Jaguars fans.
Okay, so, yeah, keep your texts coming at 590-590. Got a couple people sending in gray hair and crow's feet information for me. I will be looking at eye creams during the break. But let's talk to Luke Fox when we come back. Set up Leafs. Must-win game tonight, and if we'll see anything different with that lineup. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.